It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's 4 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 29th of August. You're very welcome along to the last 9 to noon show of this week. And lots coming up on the programme, of course. I'll tell you more about that as the show wears on. But over the next 55 minutes, we have our Friday panel. I'll introduce them to you very shortly, but I want to invite you to be involved in that conversation as well. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25000. If you want to give us a call, it's 074 91 25000. You can email comments at highlandradio.com, or you can watch as things progress and comment on our streams. We're live on the YouTube app, so you can watch at home on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, across Facebook and on the X platform. Our guest this morning, Cathy Donaghy, author and journalist. Cathy, thanks so much for coming back on. Great to see you.
Morning, Greg.
How's everything with you today?
Great.
Good
great
stuff.
Great, right, yeah. A bit of a rainy day in the show.
Yeah, of course. But it's nice in a way. I don't know. I feel like I there's no pressure on me to try and find something to do.
Pure back to school, isn't it? There's a wee bit of a downer this morning as well. I know that Melville Community College is going back on a Friday morning. There's definitely a sort of a pathetic fallacy. The weather is reflecting the mood in this house anyway.
I'm feeling a 5 p.m. loungewear coming on. That's
like
just it. But we'll see how the morning progresses and into the afternoon. Former Deputy Thomas Pringle's with us as well. Thomas, good morning to you. Thanks so much for your time.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm great, and I hope you are too. And Fianna Fáil Councillor, Councillor Fionnán Bradley, Les Cathaoirleach of the Innishow Municipal District. Good morning to you, Fionnán. Thanks so much for your time.
Morning, Greg. How are you? And good morning to your listeners and to the panel.
We're doing great. Okay. I'm not sure if the field for the presidential election is getting any clearer, but we are seeing some firming up on names, it would seem. Jim Gavin seems to be Fianna Fáil leader, Micheál Martin's preferred candidate, but Billy Kelleher, we're told, is actively out there polling support from within the party. From a Sinn Féin perspective, Piers Doherty's name is being speculated in the media today, though he insisted on this show, was it yesterday, that the party hadn't decided at all what to do. But, and I hope I didn't misinterpret his comments, he did seem pretty cool on the party backing Catherine Connolly. I'll stay with you, Fionnán, if that's all right. Who would you like to see Fianna Fáil backing? Jim Gavin? Are Fianna Fáil maybe just trying to ride the coattail of his names and reputation, and maybe you should think on and think, is this a good idea for him, or do you think he'd be a good candidate, or what?
Certainly, Greg. I think Jim Gavin would be a very, very fine candidate. I think he's always carried himself very well, should it be in the football field or should it be in his career in the Defence Forces or in the various task forces and committees that he's been a member of in recent years since stepping down as the Dublin GAA manager. But it's certainly not a fait accompli at the minute now that Jim Gavin will be the candidate. I was just thinking during the week, and I was doing a tally, and as far as I'm aware, there have been 13 possible names mooted as potential Fianna Fáil presidential election candidates. So that's a very good sign. It's a very healthy sign, and it's a sign that the party is in a very good place, that someone of the ilk of Jim Gavin would be attracted to run as a Fianna Fáil candidate. Obviously, he sees Fianna Fáil as a party that stands for what he believes in. And I'm really, really looking forward to
Conversely, though, if you're talking like that about someone that's actually outside of the party, is that not a poor indictment of Fianna Fáil?
Oh no, I mean, there are several what you might call party grandees that have been mooted. The Taoiseach himself, of course, would certainly be a very fine candidate if he chose to run. We have former ministers Eamon O'Queeve and Mary Hanafin. Of course, we have former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern has been mentioned as a possible candidate. Our own deputy here in Donegal, Pat the Cope. So there are any number of party members, or what you might call party grandees, who have been associated with the nomination as well. Billy Kelleher, the MEP, of course, and Cork, another current politician for us. So, it's not that we couldn't get anybody within the party to run. It's that we've taken our time. We've thought about this. We've thought about the presidency as an office, and indeed what the party would like to see for it, and how we would like to see it developing in the future.
Who would you like the Fianna Fáil nomination to be?
Well, at the minute, I really have no preference.
Why does no one in Fianna Fáil have any preference at all at this stage? I don't understand that. Is it sort of a tactic with the media, which is fine? But if I bought you a pint, got three into you, and we're sitting up at the end of a bar in Bunkran. I don't know if you drink or not. It doesn't matter anyway. That's besides the point. You wouldn't be able to tell me who you would who you'd be in favour, your preferred candidate.
Well, at the minute, you see, unfortunately, we're talking in a vacuum. But within the next week, this process will become clearer because the party will outline the process that it will undertake to select its candidate. Once that happens, I would expect nominations to open. And once that happens, I expect this field of 10, 11, 12 or 13 to be whittled down to, I would imagine, no more than two or three. And at that juncture, then, I would certainly have no difficulty in deciding who I would like to see as the Fianna Fáil candidate in the presidential election. But I would hate to say at the present moment that I would like a candidate X or candidate Y, and then for them maybe not even to look for the nomination. So,
but that's all right. We'll give you a pass. We'll not let on like that you picked someone that wasn't actually in contention. What about Bertie Hearn? Could you see yourself backing him?
Oh, listen, Bertie would be a very, very fine candidate. I mean, of course, his record in relation to Northern Ireland and the peace process is something that we would need to see more of on the international stage. We have conflicts in Ukraine and in Russia, Israel and Gaza, and in many different parts throughout the world. So someone with the skill set of Bertie Hearn would certainly be a very
fine
person.
What about Pat
McCobe? Yeah, another man that I would have absolutely no difficulty. In fact, I would have great pleasure in supporting.
Right. I'm not going to go through the list. I was just trying to get a sense of where you're at. Cathy Donaghy, I don't know if you want to comment on. I don't know if you want to comment on the speculation within Fianna Fáil, but I just think it's interesting this national media speculation as it relates to Pearse Doherty. People within Sinn Féin, within this county, saying that it's absolutely nonsense. But often, you know, there ain't no smoke without fire. It could be a get out, you know. He could probably run, be unsuccessful. It wouldn't necessarily impact his political career or the party, per se. I'm not sure Michelle O'Neill or Mary Lou McDonald would have that level of insulation. I could be wrong in relation to that. And as I said in the lead in there, he wasn't rushing to sort of back Catherine Connolly. So maybe the looking for someone from within the party. Could it be he? What's your view, generally speaking, Cathy?
In general, what I think about the presidential election is that it's actually become this sort of almost slightly toxic space, if that's the word, because everyone knows now that the presidential election is this run for your life, that every skeleton that has ever been in your closet is going to be come out. I remember a commentator saying, you know, that anybody that's running for the presidential election in future should probably have, you know, should come from an island off the coast of Kerry and have had no associations with any humans before, kind of thing, you know. So I think that everyone plays it very cagey. And I think that's why, because despite the fact that we know that the presidency, there's no real political clout. It's a, you know, it's an ambassadorial role on the world stage. And yes, Michael D. Higgins has showed that, you know, that there is a voice there. I think what people realise is that it's a very bruising, very difficult place to be personally. So people are really, you know, they're hedging their bets, they're weighing it up. But what happens then is what we see with what you're talking about, like with Sinn Féin and with Fianna Fáil, what we see now is we have this vacuum that it's like it'll be last minute saloon before we know what the story is.
Tactically, that's what I would do. But these people are often in bubbles, though, aren't they? They're surrounded by, they're not trawling through internet comments and stuff. Like, and we live in a political landscape now that outside of, you know, something incredibly, incredibly criminal to a person or something to do with abuse or whatever, a controversy will garner some support from somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know, Greg. I mean, I remember covering presidential elections in the past, and you know, there was a glut of nominations. There was early riders. You know, now we sort of see this. It's so late in the day, you know, while we have those candidates. You have to ask why. And I still think that the type
because
of
you because you common. I suggest, Cathy, exactly, and you've just said it, you avoid scrutiny and then you say, well, look at Mary McAleese, late entrant into the race, sailed into the Arras. Tactically, you keep your powder dry. Let the media focus on all the other people.
I do remember she came in for quite a bit of scrutiny at the time, you know, and obviously, like, she got into the arse, and I think she was an absolutely great, great president. And, you know, it would be lovely to think, or brilliant to think, that we would have, you know, a really good race with candidates of that stature coming forward. we'll just have to wait and see what the parties do now. But I think I hope they get their act together pretty soon.
It's quite ignorant of me, but I don't really know Jim Gavin. I know what he does. I don't really know Catherine Connolly. I couldn't see myself motivated to actually go to the bother of voting for either of the two of those. And it's no indictment on the characters, but we had a less than 50% turnout in the last presidential election. It'll be interesting to see what happens in this one. Lastly, but not leastly, of course, Thomas Pringle. Firstly, I can't see you really picking any Fianna Fáil candidate as your choice, if the truth be told. What do you think about their lineup, potential lineup, and what do you think about this media speculation over Piers Doherty?
Well, I think that's probably what it is media speculation. And, from a Fianna Fáil and a Sinn Féin point of view, they basically don't have to do anything over the last number of weeks. And they get loads of media attention for that. And as political parties, what you do is you crave media attention. And when you get media attention for not actually doing anything at all, that's the ideal. And especially over the summer period here. So I would imagine that it'll drag out until whenever the nominations close for the presidency, and the parties will maximise that to get as much attention for themselves and get as much of their name in the media as they possibly can for no outgoings at all, really. And I think that's what you're seeing, and that's the way it's going to go. And in terms of candidates, I think that Catherine Connolly is the best candidate, and Catherine Connolly is in the field, and has declared her hand that she wants to be a candidate, and that's the candidate that I'll be supporting anyway, to ensure, because I think she'd be the best of anybody that has been mentioned so far, the best of anybody in terms of actually providing the role and providing the kind of leadership that the country needs. And I think the presidency, while it may not have much political power in terms of hand on the wheel, that is very important in terms of setting the agenda of what the country wants to do and stuff like that, and what the country sees itself as doing. Mm. And from that point of view, I think it's very important.
I think if you take a step back, we all know what the presidency is and where it is important and where it's not. I think people sort of start having a debate about its importance depending on how it suits them, if you know what I mean. Sort of either amplifying what it can be done or completely poo-pooing it as it being a nothing burger. So, but I think most people, if they take a step back, we know what it is, we know what the power is, and we know what we can expect from a president. Is there another name could step out of the shadows, Thomas, that could influence you away from Ms. Connolly?
I'm fully supporting Catherine, and I will be helping her campaign over the coming weeks as well to try and ensure that she is the next president of Ireland, because I think what Michael D. Higgins has shown as well is it's a very important role, and it's a very important role in putting out there on the international stage what Ireland's views and what the feelings are of the Irish people, because we've seen that the feelings of the Irish people are quite different from the way that the government reacts as well to over the last while, particularly in relation to what's going on in Gaza and the slaughter that's taking place there. The Irish people have had taken a lot stronger role than the Irish government has in relation to that, and I think the president has been very strong as well in speaking out and about that, and that needs to continue, I think.
Cathy, would you share that view that it has an important place in the sphere of the presidency?
Yeah, I absolutely would agree with Thomas there. I love the fact that Michael D. Higgins, is a poet, and he seems like a wise elder, and in this time of, I think, deep crisis in the world, what we kind of need is sort of wise elders. And I know Mary Robinson is one of those as well. She's actually in an organization called the Elders, and they've really stepped forward.
I don't feel they speak for me, though. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't. The fact that he's a poet or whatever, or Mary McLeese is labelled as an elder, I don't really feel that speaks to me. I wonder, am I kind of like the general population, or is it just because I'm a thick?
No, I think, when I think speak for me, I mean, particularly in relation to Gaza, I think Michael D. Higgins has been a shining light in this country. I think he has, nailed what a lot of people feel. And he has actually, I mean, people would say he's gone beyond the realms of where he should have gone. But I'm so glad for him. I'm so glad that someone in of his stature and in his office, you know, just said, you know, this is wrong. This is wrong. This, you know, he actually nailed his colours to the mast there. And I was so grateful to have someone like that in that office, calling it for what it was, calling it for what it is.
It's remarkable that what is happening and continues to happen over there. And I think it's somewhat tied in with another issue we were going to talk about. And maybe they'll cross over. So I'll take a break and come back, because I'm sure Cathy, Finan and Thomas all have something to say on the next topic after these. A caller says Bertie Hearn was mentioned. That man wrecked the country and took millions and millions of pounds and is a disgrace to the country. But he also enjoys a high level of support, and for, you know, much of a generation, he can do absolutely no wrong. I think a good candidate would have been Dustin the Turkey. He's a good talker and non-political. The salary would be chicken feed compared to what others make. He was a very popular character, and I don't see why not. Well, he didn't even make waves in Eurovision. So I'm going to discard that one. The UN Security Council has adopted a compromise resolution on the withdrawal of UNIFIL peacekeeping forces from southern Lebanon. The operation will be brought to a close in 2027, bringing to an end a mission which Irish troops have been associated with for nearly 50 years, and 47 Irish lives have been lost over that period of time. Not surprisingly, the United States, supported by Israel, had been seeking to have the UN troops fully withdrawn by this time next year, but France, Ireland, Australia and Poland intensively negotiated for UNIFIL's mandate to be extended beyond 2026. Thomas Pringle, you know, for me, and I only have a passing knowledge of this stuff, you know, Israel again seemingly pulling the strings, have United States on board and probably have their plans well advanced for what they intend to do. We know how they've described the peacekeeping forces. We know how they've talked of them supporting terrorist groups over there. You know, that's their motivation for getting them out, for them to continue whatever they intend to do.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and I think that the main takeaway from this is that the Americans have provided them with 100% support. And actually, the Americans were going to use their veto in the Security Council to actually end the mandate straight away. And it was through negotiations then that the mandate was actually extended for another year. But it shows that the Americans and the Israelis are pursuing an agenda. And I would think, sadly, that the Israeli agenda is to expand into southern Lebanon and to expand Israel in that area. And in order to do that, they have to get rid of the UN and get rid of the UN mandate. And that's what they've set out to do. And their backers, the Americans, have achieved that for them. It might be a wee bit slower than they expected, but it's there. And we'll see a continuation of the war into southern Lebanon at that stage, and that's the sad part about it, you know. And I think from an Irish point of view as well too, and from a government point of view, you know, a lot has been made about the fact of that we can't participate in peacekeeping mandates because Russia uses the veto to ensure that they don't happen. But here we have our friends the Americans using the veto to end a peacekeeping mandate, you know.
Is that not an argument though to get rid of the triple lock them?
No, it's not an argument to get rid of the triple lock, because are we really going to stay in southern Lebanon and go to war with Israel and America over what happens there? Because if you haven't got a UN mandate to be there, you're actually taking one side or another, then so, and you're going into a conflict situation, and that's the reality of the
Israel
of
the though have accused us of that anyway. They say, and there's been a bit of flip-flopping in the language, because not so long ago they were accusing the peacekeepers of turning a blind eye to Hezbollah's military build-up, and now they're saying, well, listen, because of what we've been doing, Hezbollah's severely weakened and there's no need for this peacekeeping force. So they change opinions like the wind to try and suit the argument effectively then, I presume, so they can pursue whatever they were planning to pursue into the first place.
Yeah, Israel will say whatever they want to say and to suit their agenda, as you say, Greg, you know, and that's the reality of the situation. So therefore, we can't put any store on what Israel has to say in relation to it. I think the UN mandate and the Irish troops in southern Lebanon have been, over the years, have been shown to be very worthwhile, and basically have been shown to protect the local citizens in that area as well, largely from Israeli aggression, not so much from the Hezbollah or whoever else has been there, but they have acted as a break there to actually help them, and they've helped very many local village residents as well too. I think that's well known, you know. So sadly, that, and I think it's probably the longest UN mission as well as in Lebanon, I think, or perhaps it's the Golan Heights out there, but it's coming to an end now, and it's coming to an end because the US and Israel want to go into southern Lebanon and take it over for a greater Israel, and that's what we're going to see happening, unfortunately.
Let's not forget, of course, in case anyone has, that some of the greatest threat to peacekeepers in recent time has been from Israel themselves firing on peacekeepers, firing close to where they to where they are stationed, and dozens and dozens of them have been injured. Cathy Donaghy, what's your view on this? And as I said just before the break, it's going to feed into this sort of wider conversation, perhaps, of the devastation that's been wreaked, the man-made famine in Gaza. The displacement of an entire population, the purposeful starving of that population, the continuous indiscriminate bombing, and you know, maybe that's just an indication of what's to come next as soon as these peacekeepers are out of the way.
Yeah, I can't help but think that, Greg, that, you know, that, I mean, number one, Irish peacekeepers have an incredible reputation wherever they are in the world. You know, they have been welcomed, and they do a great job, and their reputation stands for themselves. And any attempt to besmirch that just, you know, is exactly that. It's beneath even talking about. I think that what seems to me, and it's hard to know what is going on here, but it seems to me that Israel is trying to just, you know, clear the decks so they can do what they want. You know, just clear the lines, remove the peacekeepers. And the way that they have, and I'll say this as a journalist, the way they have targeted journalists doing their jobs, I think there were 5 killed in a strike this week. They struck, and then, you know, a few minutes later, if you watch the footage, they struck again, you know, and that's that picture earlier this week that I saw of a, you know, a reporter's or a photojournalist camera lying with blood on it. It's sort of, you know, that they're killing truth, essentially, is what they're doing. So you take out the eyes and ears of the people who are there, you know, to keep the peace, the people who are there to report the facts. And then you do what you want. And the end game seems to be, you know, to expand the territory, to remove people, and to raise, you know,
why, the population. And then it's like, it's not rhetorical, but it's an open-ended question, because what is the why? But why are the United States so complicit in this? And if the truth be told, on the scale of what's going on there, Europe's pretty much sitting on its hands as well. I mean, you can highlight what a country's doing and a resolution here and a call there. But if the truth be told, we are all standing by and watching it happen. And, you know, history will remember that when this becomes the historical event that it is, people will say, well, what was the rest of the world doing? Because sometimes I often think about that in terms of sort of Nazi Germany, but we're living through that right now. We are effectively standing watching it happen, and the people that we voted for right across Europe and across the rest of the world are all really complicit in it, because, you know, inaction, proper inaction is, you know, you're complicit, I think.
I think that's exactly as you've described. I think that's how everyone feels. You know, so many people that I talk to on a daily basis, they actually feel completely powerless. And yet we're watching, you know, what is a genocide unfold on our phones, these images of children coming in. I don't think there's a day I look at my phone but I don't cry at what's happening in Gaza. And then what good is that to anybody? You know, and at the same time, you know, you try and keep raising your voice, you try and keep highlighting it, you know, but we're also I feel utterly powerless in the face of this devastation. I'm so angry that the world has turned its back, and that the powers that be, I think if America decided this, you know, this has got to stop, it would stop. That's what's such a, that's what killed me, really. If they just said, that's it, you know what, we're not backing.
But I can't get my, well, I can't, I, like, there are people who are spinning this as justified. But then, like, stuff happens right in front of you and it's not challenged, you can't get your head around it. Donald Trump's wife, Melania or whatever, it was covered everywhere that she sent some letter to Putin asking for, you know, because she cares so much about children in Ukraine. But as far as I'm aware, nothing to Benjamin Netanyahu at all. But no one points that out, that in one part of the world, one set of lives have a completely different value to another. I'm not belittling anything that's happening in Ukraine, but it's nothing compared to the scale of what's happening in Palestine. And yet, it's not called out anymore. The world is in such a way that nothing is uniting in opinion, or I don't even know how to phrase it because I can't get my head around it.
There are white children in Ukraine.
Yeah, but is it that? I just think the same effort to dehumanize the people of Ukraine happened in this day and age, I don't think the color of the skin would actually be as big a factor. I think it's actually almost beyond that, Thomas.
But the point is that the same effort hasn't happened to the people.
Yeah, Ukraine. There is that.
You know? And that's the reality of the situation, unfortunately.
And God help you if you're in Sudan and you want even a paragraph in a newspaper.
It's not even mentioned anywhere.
Fionnán, I suppose just to the wider point there of everything we've been talking about, of course, I've thrown a lot in there, so I'm not asking for a specific response, but looking on your reaction to the UN being forced out of South Lebanon and, of course, to the ongoing genocide on Palestine.
Well, I mean, it's very, very worrying, Greg, to think that UN involvement in Lebanon will cease now about the end of 2027. I mean, there really is enough tension and turmoil in the world in general, but more specifically in that region of the world at the minute, that I can't see how the UN withdrawing its peacekeeping force is going to help that. I really, really can't. I can only see the situation going from bad to worse, and I really hope I'm wrong. I want to be proved wrong on that, but I would not be confident that I will be, you know. It was a sad day yesterday now that vote went through at the Security Council for the involvement to end at the end of 2027, you know. There's a bleak outlook on the future, I would say, in relation to it, you know.
The caller says, Israel didn't start the current war. What about the hostages? Does this woman not think of most of the images she looks at are for propaganda purposes? Well, like,
I suppose, Greg, what I might say on that, as you were talking, I was thinking on, I think it was Mother Teresa, it was Gandhi, excuse me, sorry, I said at one point that an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. And, you know, I think if we had a bit more thinking like that at the minute, right across all the regions that are in conflict, you know, a bit less of, well, you know, that group did whatever. Well, so therefore,
like,
we
had what happened on October 7th was absolutely horrendous. It was just nothing any human should be responsible. The continuing holding of hostages, absolutely disgraceful. But I'm not sure even if it's a fair comparison. If the British in the 70s or 80s or whatever decided that every part of Ireland would be flattened and everyone in Ireland would be moved to County Cork and everything else annihilated, I'm not sure. Is that, Cathy, Thomas, Fionnán, you know better than I, you know, that's what we're talking about here. You know, the actions of individuals, the IDF, of course, I don't know what level of support they have in Gaza now at the moment, but this was a collective punishment that goes far and beyond anything that would be seen as a measured response to those horrible events in October 7th.
The conflict didn't start.
I understand that. I know that, yeah.
Yeah, well your listener that rang in doesn't understand that.
I get you.
And, I mean, I've recently read a book by, I forgot his name now, but in Lebanon, Robert Fisk, and he died years ago, before this present phase of the conflict started, and he was writing about the West Bank and what was going on that there. And you could have been reading about what was happening that very day. And that book was written about 10 years ago. And the reality is Israel has attacked and slaughtered people in the West Bank in 2000, I think 2008, 2015, and now in this time as well. The only difference is now is the extent of it, and that they're going for what looks to be, in their mind, a final solution or something like that there, where they're going to slaughter everybody. And, you know, and so this conflict has been going going on for an awful long time. It's been going on since about the 1960s or so, or even before that. And the reality is, it actually was the British that started this conflict in the first place with the Balfour Declaration after the Second World War. The problem is that the whole governments in the West, like von der Leyen was over there with the Israelis walking around and looking how terrible it was back in October, and the Germans are backing the Israelis, the Italians are backing the Israelis, the Americans are backing the Israelis 100%. The French and the English are backing the Israelis, even though Starmer is saying something slightly different at the minute.
What they're saying effectively is we're not necessarily telling you not to do what you're doing. We're just kind of asking you to do what you're doing, but not do it so in our faces, or something along those lines. And what I'm effectively saying there is watery words.
Yeah, and if they could get rid of all the journalists and they could have no coverage of it and let them slaughter away, they would gladly do that. I'd like to say to Greg, it's very important, and I think for Irish people to come out and show that they are opposing this as well, and there's protests all over the country on a regular basis in relation to that, and those do send a very strong message to the Palestinian people, and that message does get through. So standing and supporting your local campaigns and that there is very important, and it also puts a lot of pressure on our own Irish government as well, because they would certainly be playing a different tune if they weren't being, pressure wasn't being put on them to actually fight and support Palestine too. So that's all very important, and people should. I know it's at the current climate, it's, you feel like you're. What can you do?
Yep.
But you can show support, and I think that does get through as well.
Kathy, did you want to say one final thing before the next break?
I do actually, Greg. I think it's really, really important that your caller who called in.
Oh yes, of course, that was directed at you.
The first thing I would say is that in terms of the use of the word propaganda is kind of insulting at this stage. And I think you just need to look, if leaving any other sources out of this, the sources that I rely on is proper journalism. It's Al Jazeera, it's Channel 4, it's BBC News, the pictures speak for themselves. There's a lot of stuff coming out there. How can we call what we're seeing propaganda?
But I think I think there's a psychology to this, and I'm not saying this is of the commentator there. But maybe if I kind of convinced myself it was propaganda, I could sleep better at night, because I'd be effectively saying, right, kids aren't starving to death. Kids aren't being blown to pieces. Okay, it's propaganda. I'm going to have a good night's sleep now. Sometimes I wonder if people try and protect themselves.
I think it's a really good point you make about protecting yourselves. I've written about this during this whole, I'm not going to call it a war because it's not a war. Psychologists have talked about the fact that ordinary people at home sitting in their kitchen, and they're scrolling on their phones, there's a genocide unfolding. And, we have to protect ourselves. We have to function in the world as going out to do our jobs, as parents, whatever we're doing. We cannot allow ourselves to, I can't function. I can't cope. The world is such a horrible place. I'm just going to crawl back into bed. We have to cope. So we've got to mind ourselves and our mental well-being as well. But at the same time, as Thomas says, we can't look away. We can't pretend this isn't happening. There are things we can do. We can write to our public representatives. We can, take part in protest demonstrations. We can use our voice in whatever way we can. I'm always one that says, right, when I feel overwhelmed about something, and I feel overwhelmed with the absolutely enormous wrongdoing of what's going on right now. I think what it comes back to what we can do in our own world. We can try and make a positive impact first in our own families, talk about these things, then the ripple widens in our communities. What can we do? How can we show up? And then on a wider level, reaching out further, reaching out, to organizations to put pressure on our politicians. So it has to start with each of us as well. And yes, we can't look away, but we also have to mind ourselves as well. These are extraordinary times.
Finally, Fionn, have we not, tied our own hands, and when I say us, the government, in that, we're not politically neutral anymore. And it seems we kind of have to go along to some extent that we can step out the science, step outside the lines with the European party line. Is it not? Do you feel there's any missed opportunity, Fionnuala, for us to have a space on the international stage as peacekeepers, as brokers, as intermediaries, where we can call out what we see, you know, and even maybe have an active role in resolving that? We've just aligned ourselves so on certain issues, it would seem, and, you know, we've lost that ability. And some might say, does that sort of cross over to our actual independence, our sovereignty, and whatever neutrality we claim to have?
Well, I mean, let's face facts. It's very, very difficult for a country the size of Ireland to really have an impact on the international stage when it comes to conflicts like this. We just simply don't have the army, we don't have the navy or whatever else to be able to, in a military sense, make any real difference. So we have to remain neutral. And I mean, I do believe the actions that the Irish people, both the general public and the government have taken, are making a real difference to the lives of the Palestinians, and that if we keep plugging away and keep hammering away and keep doing what we're doing. I mean, Ireland has provided over €91 million in support to Palestine since January of 2023. On the 28th of May last year, we did recognise the state of Palestine. We had, I think it was 30 or possibly 35 sick children evacuated from Gaza to Ireland for medical treatment and one thing and another. And they're all small drops in the ocean and small steps that the government have taken. But at least it's something. And,
okay,
you know, every small step, every small act of kindness from every single individual, I really do believe does make a difference. And, you know, I would really appeal to people not to be disheartened or not to feel, you know, well, what can I do? I'm just Joe Soap here in Buncrana or here in Donegal or whatever. But, you know, that small thing that you do, that maybe small 2 or 5 euro donation or whatever that you make to some charity or other that's working in that region, that will, I hope, should make a difference to people's lives there. Yeah.
All right. I'd love to see RTE's editorial policy on this. I think it'd be interesting. I presume there is one written down. But anyway, listen, thanks for that. We're going to take a break, back with more. We were speaking to Cathy actually earlier in the week about the indiscriminate dumping of invasive or non-native oysters on the banks of the Foyle, and, you know, the fact that you'd be in that mind space to do that and not think it has any consequences. And it got me thinking of other stories we heard this week, the misuse of public toilets. They're cleaned. I was chatting to volunteers, or we had contact from volunteers that clean port-a-loos, and 5 minutes later, they're in an absolute disgrace. Full toilet rolls down the toilet, people piddling in them, leaving food and drinks and all in there. Parking in disabled parking spaces, an ongoing issue. Dog fouling, littering, and on it goes. And I'm always at pains, Cathy, I'll start with you on this one. I'm always at pains to say, yes, but it's a minority of people. You know, it's a minority of dog owners. It's a minority of motorists. And I'm just starting to rethink, you know, are we becoming careless about each other, our country, our facilities? Like, is it, maybe it is still a minority. That's what I wanted to ask you guys. But it's just so much of it. You just wonder, how busy is this minority of, you know, this 1 or 2% of the population?
Yeah, I think it probably is a minority is the first thing, Greg. But, you know, when it comes to something like dog fouling, right? Like, it only takes one dog or two dogs to make an awful mess. I remember being out, my children were small, and I remember going for a walk, and one of them was in a buggy and the other had him by the hand, and the buggy wheels got clattered in, you know, dog poop. And I remember going back to the car and trying to fold a buggy and take wipes, and I was just cursing, you know, whoever would do this for people and children and walking along. So, you know, the problem is it only takes one or two. But I suppose, you know, we could say we need more measures, we need more litter wardens. I think that would be good visibility to have litter wardens on our, you know, our shore fronts and on our walks. And I know there was a story this week as well about persistent dog fouling along the shore, the lovely shore path in Mavelle, close to where I live myself. But, you know, I think, right, it's incumbent on all of us. If you see someone pulling in to a car parking space that is designated for a disabled person, and it's clear that they're not, you know, disabled, we have to start calling stuff out.
If yeah, someone, but those what we've heard is people that do that. The same people are those that are inclined to square up to you and tell you to f off and mind your own business. You see, so it's
maybe you know what? I have no problem going up to somebody on the beach and saying, "Did your dog just do that?" Do you know? Here, I've got a poop bag in my pocket, which I always carry when I'm out with my dog, and you know,
I carry one when I'm not even with my dog.
Well, exactly, Greg.
No, I'm joking. I don't have a dog. Sorry, go ahead, Kathy.
I don't have a dog. But, you know, I think that's it. I think we all have to just take responsibility for this, right? Like, number one, that, you know, say our blue flag beaches are closed to dogs, right? You can't exercise your dog on the blue flag beaches from the 1st of June to the 15th of September, right? I abide by that, absolutely. But I do feel that responsible dog owners are being victimised for those who will not who refuse to clean up.
So we're taking a hammer to crack a nut.
They are, and it's not fair, right? To everybody who has a dog, like many, I see loads of dog owners, and they clean up after their dog. But I have no problem going up to somebody and saying, "Here, did you see what your dog just did? Here, I have a bag in my pocket."
But when you talk, when you talk about more litter wardens, more traffic wardens, more policing, more patrols, you see that kind of. That's an awful lot of resources to put towards a minority of people, you see that. So I'm just wondering, is it really... Greg,
you know, yes, minority, but if someone sort of sees, oh, well, there's dog poop there, why would I bother cleaning up? You know, these things have a habit of kind of just multiplying, right? And I actually think people power, that pester power, is really, really important. And we have more power than we think we have.
Councillor Bradley, what do you think?
Yeah, I have to say I would agree wholeheartedly with Cathy there. I mean, I don't know if it's fair just to label everyone in society as more careless. Could it be the complete opposite? I mean, is it the case that these behaviours have always been happening, but it's just that as a people, as a society, we're becoming more caring? We're very inclusive, we're looking out for minorities, and because of that, are we more attentive, and therefore do we notice these wrongs more? Do we notice the dog poop that hasn't left it, or the person?
So you're saying it's because we're becoming more caring. Like I hear stories of a car breaking down on the Polestar roundabout, and they're there 30 minutes, maybe 3,000 cars have passed, and not one person stopping to give them a push until a hero does.
Yeah, no, listen, and look, there's no question about it. I suppose everybody in society is rushing all the time, me as much as, maybe more than anybody else, and we're all so busy and lead busy lives. I mean, that is the flip side of it. But I really do think personal responsibility has to come into it here. You know, if you are a dog owner, it is just completely, totally, entirely, and utterly unacceptable in 2025 that you would allow your dog to foul.
But you can't blame the dogs for public toilets. We don't open them because we actually can't afford to maintain them, because they'll be in an absolute state in no time whatsoever. So that's not to do with dogs. The dogs aren't parking in disabled spaces, and I'm not saying you are, but I want to broaden it out beyond dog ownership, if that makes sense.
I was only using that as one example. I mean, the very, very same principle applies here in Buncrana. This week we had a situation where it came to light that the toilets in the driving test centre, for all of any shown, the public toilets were locked with no warning. And why were they locked? When I contacted the RSA, it was because the toilets had been misused. So it's the very same story. There's public toilets that some individual or some group of people went in and misused and abused, and obviously they thought nothing of it, but look at the repercussions now. For the last number of weeks, people in Anishone who have been going to set their driving test haven't been able to use that public toilet. So it's back to this thing of saying, you know, do my actions have an effect on somebody else?
But that's the whole question. Are more of us now not considering that? And I'm not saying that's where we're getting at, but I'm saying if you collate all of these things, can they all be attributed to a minority of people? But I mean, listen, there seems to be a consensus that that is the case, and I'm not suggesting otherwise. We are very short on time, and I just want to bring Thomas Pringle in on this. Thomas?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one, Greg, you know, and I do think in terms of public toilets, there is it's a two-pronged thing. First of all, we don't support the cleaning of public toilets. We don't support the providing staff to maintain public toilets in Donegal or in the south at all. I know for like public toilets, say in Donegal town, something like that, you might pay somebody for half an hour in the morning and half an hour in the evening to maintain those public toilets, and that's just not enough. I think then of the I travel to Dublin, and if you go through. No, I can't remember.
Cavan?
towns along the way there where there is public toilets, and they're spotlessly clean, and they're available to use for anybody along the way there, you know. So if we do engage and maintain them, they will be used as well, and they will be maintained too. And I think that part of it is the idea that nobody's going to get caught.
Well, you see, I just don't understand. Like, I would say if you went to 100 private toilets, 100 houses, they'd all be clean and they'd smell lovely and they'd have potpourri and what have you. But we see some people, when they see a public toilet, they turn into rabid animals. Almost, you know, like, I just don't.
Greg, I don't know if the answer to that now is, and it warrants further discussion, do you have or should you have a very nominal charge on using public toilets?
Thomas dead against it.
I
don't mind it. I don't mind it. Thomas dead against it. Kathy, you're the deciding potential.
I see the merit, but I don't. I think it'd be really annoying. You show up to use a toilet and you don't have the 20 cent or the euro or whatever it is. You know, unless there was a person there to take the money and give you change or use a card, I think that would be kind of discriminatory, especially if you're in a
way. Fionn, thanks for opening that can of worms as I say goodbye. We do appreciate your time, Councillor Fionn Bradley. Have a great day. Thanks so much for joining us. It's been lovely having you on the programme.
Thank you, Greg.
Kathy Donaghy, author and journalist, always a treat. Thanks so much. Have a lovely weekend. And last but not least, Thomas Pringle. We'll chat to you soon. Thanks very much for coming on. It is greatly appreciated. Okay, that was our Friday panel on a range of issues there. Coming up after 10, we'll be remembering Ollie Horgan. Ollie Horgan, obviously, taught in St. Eunan's for almost three decades, was very well liked in Finn Harps and made a big contribution to Donegal life. We learnt yesterday that very sadly he passed away at just 57 years of age. He was incredibly popular, even amongst football fans all over the country. They recognised just how important a person he was in that scene. We'll be paying tribute to him, so I invite you, if you've got any memories or anything you wish to say about the late, great Ollie Horgan, you can get them into us now, 086 60 25000, and be part of us remembering Ollie Horgan.